Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Rattle Over. I'm your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 82. And as always, if you want to listen to this one and our previous 81 episodes, feel free to subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting platform, whether it is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Search Black and White and Rattle Over there. Feel free to rate, review, subscribe, all those good things. So we shall get things going here by bringing in the crew of Samuel Fressy. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Danny. To use the parlance of New York City, it is dead-ass mad brick outside. It is very cold. It was like 10 degrees overnight.
It's not warm.
Not fun. No. And I, like an idiot, really wanted to cook a particular thing last night, so I went out to the grocery store after the UVA game to go get stuff, and I was like, this is a poor decision. It's like the knight at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. He chose poorly. But yeah, envying those in the warmer climes today.
Somebody who spends his winter in not so warm of climates. Chucks, hello, Chucks.
Yeah, it's not as bad as over there in your end. It's still pretty reasonable here, but even though it's cold outside, it's warm in my heart. So yeah, let's get the show rolling.
And we are Sergio Romero-less this week. I am going to assume that based on what Sam Lopresti said, Sergio is sitting on a beach somewhere. No, just kidding. He's actually traveling. So that is why Sergio's not here. So we shall begin our takeaways from the week that was with Chucks. What you got for us, bud?
Well, my main takeaway is, it's hard. It's always hard when you have two games because it's like I have a lot and I have to pick one. And I was like, oh, man.
But pick one and you must do it now.
Yeah, and I will. Sometimes I cheat. I pick two, but I will.
You must pick one and you must do it now.
I will indeed pick one. yeah, the one I'll pick is just that I kind of learned that I have to get a little better at assessing players, assessing players' performances because last episode I remember I'd said I'd praised Alexandro and then I think I'd criticized Bentancur. I think that was it, if I remember correctly. And then obviously based on the weekend I was, they had vastly contrasting fortunes, both players. So I don't know. I really just need to think about how I like pay attention to players during games. But the thing is with fullbacks, it's so difficult because they're like on the edge of the screen, So it's like when you're watching game, it's like on the very edge of the screen. So you kind of have to be like squint and try and find them. But so I have to do a better job of just assessing players' performances during games. And hopefully I'll succeed.
All right, Samuel. Chuck's left you the main talking point coming out of Saturday's game. Are you gonna go for it?
Yeah, I am.
I figured as much.
My takeaway this week is that personnel turns over, but this front office has absolutely no idea what the hell they are doing. Unless the finances are truly this bad, there is absolutely no reason to suddenly be pulling deals from Paulo Dybala off the table or trying to alter them. And here is a guy who has been one of the greatest servants to this club in this last decade, a guy that has palpably shown his love for the club in the past. And the guy that the coach that you brought in, re-brought in to great fanfare, the guy that he wanted to build this team around going forward. He wanted to build this project around Paulo Dybala. And you are making every effort possible to inspire Dybala to leave in a huff and go somewhere else for free without getting any value out of his departure at all for reasons. I understand the injuries these last year and a half have been concerning, but in my opinion, it's still not a reason to be doing this, to be playing with fire the way that they have been doing it, to the point where you might have actually angered him to the point of him saying, no, we're going to take our business elsewhere. It's foolish. It's stupid. And here we are doing it anyway, just like we've been doing a lot of other foolish and stupid stuff over the last couple of years. It was under Fabio Paratici. But now with Maurizio Arrivabene, and we don't know how much Cherubini has to do with this or Arrivabene. Arrivabene certainly was the mouthpiece of it a couple of days ago. Now you're looking at a yet another thing that could extend this rebuild interminably and deprive yourself of perhaps the best player on the team. So yeah, this front office just has, ever since Beppe Marotta left, has just so totally lost the plot that things are going to have to get better there before they get better on the field.
And that is really the, unfortunately, the main focus of the past, you know, we're recording here on Sunday night, and the past, you know, 24 hours or so is really what Paulo Dybala did rather than, or, and everything that has kind of led up to it being rehashed. And not Juventus winning a game with relative ease against a very depleted Udinese side. And as we've chronicled on the website for literally 2 years, this has been a contract negotiation that, you know, was never going to be easy. It never seems to be all that easy when it comes to Dybala a lot of the time. But, you know, as Sam pointed out in his recap, you know, this goes back even further to when Dybala was rumored or to be very close to a move to Manchester United in a swap deal for Romelu Lukaku, who instead went to Inter and is now back in England. But it's just, especially these last couple months where we thought in early October, Juventus and Dybala's camp, and most notably his agent Jorge Antun, had the, you know, basically a verbal agreement for the contract extension between 8 million net and then the 2 million in bonuses. And then it just became, okay, when is he going to sign it? When is he going to sign it? When is he going to sign it? And we're sitting here in the middle of January. He still hasn't signed it. Obviously things are very frayed between the two sides. If Dybala's death stare towards the Tribuna was any indication of that. And it's just become such an avoidable mess these last couple months. And I don't know, when you have a contract extension last for this long, or extension talks, I should say, last for this long, you're bound to find some trouble. And here we go, Juventus and Dybala, at least from my point of view right now, don't look like they're going to be exactly together for a very long time after the season.
I mean, it's really hard to speak very definitively on things like contract negotiations, because, I mean, while journalists do, you know, give us like inside scoops on like, okay, they had a meeting on, you know, Wednesday, and then this is generally how it went, we don't know exactly what was said. These meetings are obviously behind closed doors, as, I mean, they should. So, you know, we just don't know. Of course, you know, if we knew exactly what was said, then it would be a little easier to assess the situation. But now we're
a little easier.
Much easier, of course. Make our jobs a lot easier.
We might know why they've drawn this out for 2 years, Chuck.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because that's, you know, first of all, absurd, and secondly, extremely unusual. So, you know, for example, you mentioned that there seemed to be a verbal agreement in place between Dybala and Juventus. So then that begs the question, okay, if there was already a verbal agreement in place, then, I mean, what took so long from turning verbal into, you know, written, which is what counts in, you know, counts in any kind of transaction, the written word, you know, signed and sealed, that's what obviously counts. So, you know, there's a question there. I remember when we talked about Dybala's contract, I think in the summer, I think the summer was about the last time we talked about it extensively. I remember I'd mentioned that, or speculated, I guess, that, you know, okay, contract negotiations generally are about money, of course. You know, Dybala says, you know, hey, I want more money, and, you know, I want a new contract to include, you know, more wages and stuff. Okay, fair enough. But that's merely one angle, one variable of the contract negotiation. There is, you know, the length of the contract. There have been many times where, you know, contracts have essentially been agreed upon, but then fall apart because of the desired length of the contract. So what a player wants 2 years, the club wants, or well, usually it's the other way around. Usually it's like the club will want 2 years or something, and then the player wants in like 3 years. I specifically remember Willian at Chelsea. I was reading about this the other day. Willian at Chelsea, he wanted a 3-year contract extension, I believe, with Chelsea at the time, and then the club only wanted 2 years, so that's why it fell apart, and you know, they went their separate ways. So you know, that's another thing that can happen. Okay, you know, maybe there's a disagreement there. So yeah, you have money, contract, or the length of the contract, and also variables like bonuses. So you know, performance-based bonuses, bonuses, is there something there as well? And I remember, this is something I mentioned in the summer, was, you know, and I mean, this, again, this is wildly speculative, I don't know, but, you know, could there be also a case of Dybala wanting, I guess, how do I say it, wanting a certain role promised at the club? So, you know, wanting to be, I don't want to say guaranteed, but wanting to be assured to some degree of like, okay, is this team to some degree going to be built around me? Is there going to be some kind of, you know, am I going to be a focal point to some degree in the current slash future Juventus side? That's something I speculated, because just of how much he's been kind of, yeah, kind of yo-yoed around in the team, positionally speaking. So, you know, he's been played false nine. He's been played on the right. We've had, you know, three different managers. We've had one manager playing very possession-based football, I'd say two playing, wanting to play possession-based football, then playing a little more conservative style football, different formations. And obviously this counts for everyone, you know, everybody's experienced, every player has experienced this, but I think Dybala's managed it quite well. Is there some kind of, you know, feeling of like, okay, you know, what is my role going to be at the club? Am I going to be kind of some kind of focal point? Am I going to have a relatively fixed position as a seconda punta? You know, who knows? Maybe that's something there as well. Because, they're human beings, and sure, money is a big issue, but I mean, he's an ambitious guy. He wants glory too, you know, he wants recognition. So, yeah, what are the variables besides money? I think that's really the key question. What are the variables besides money that is causing this to take longer than, I don't know, longer than my career as a writer at SB Nation, which is, yeah, also years. And seems like this contract negotiation is taking years. So it has taken years, pardon me. So yeah, who knows? I don't know.
I think what one aspect that you haven't put in there yet, Chucks, is egos. And you know, I do think that there was, especially when Fabio Paratici was around, was eight, there probably was a healthy dose of bruised ego involved in the early stages of that negotiation, because there was Paratici saying, you know, looking at was a very public failure on his part to get Dybala out and Lukaku in, you know, and all of a sudden Dybala not only stays, he starts producing and, you know, wins the MVP of the season last year. And now he has to start negotiating a contract extension with this guy that he had clearly wanted out of the club just a couple of months before. So that probably colored at least the early stages of this. And now again, you know, Maurizio Arrivabene just taking a really inexplicable shot at Dybala, considering the fact that he is right now, in the absence of Federico Chiesa for the rest of the year, he is the best player on this team. And the main attacking outlet. And he's going to go and badmouth him publicly like that. Dybala has ridden a lot. You know, like I said, he loves this team. He 2 years ago when he scored that goal after the whole Lukaku thing fell apart, yes, he pointed at his own back, to the name on his back, and then he patted the badge. You know, he scores against Napoli last year, and he immediately went and kissed the badge. He loves this club. But is there a point now where you've angered him to the point where, even though he loves us, he has to let us go? And I do think that we're starting to find that point, because there is just such the club has and especially the new directors, who didn't have anything to do with that before, have just been so needlessly antagonistic towards him, which just it doesn't seem necessary, and it boggles my mind why you would do that so publicly, unless you really wanted him gone. But if you wanted him gone, then you should have done that in the summer transfer window when you could have gotten something out of it. It makes no sense. It makes it look like whatever plan is going on isn't, you know, is there a plan? Is there a coherent plan, or is it just a really crappy plan? This behavior is really concerning to me from the front office, because number one, is that going to reflect on how the front office treats players in the future, and how, you know, and whether or not that suddenly takes a little bit of the shine off Juventus as a direction? Oh God, the directors are going to be jerks to you. Or does it mean that this group is just not competent and not going to be capable of getting this rebuilding phase in the direction that it needs to go? It raises serious questions about how the front office is being handled. And there already have been serious questions about it for quite a while now, given the way Andrea Agnelli has behaved over the last couple of years. But, you know, we've gone very quickly and with a very clear line of demarcation from being one of the best run clubs in Italy under Beppe Marotta to a team whose front office really just seems like an utter train wreck the moment that he was forced out. And it makes the prospect of this rebuild going years and years and years look a lot more like reality than not.
And you know, to add to that as well, it's like, I'm thinking multiple things here, because firstly, it seems to me like you would want in any type of rebuild, not even a rebuild, but just any type of team, long-term kind of team vision, you'd want to build around a spine of a team, or a spine of players rather. So, you know, the goalkeeper, obviously. And then, so in our case, just, Walsh in goal. And clearly you have De Ligt, you want to, you know, build around him. Locatelli, Chiesa, and I would think Dybala, you know, I think those are the, what was that, 1, 2, 3, 4 key players that you want to build around. Not saying that everybody else is just like, okay, get them all, you know, get them out of here. But I think those are kind of the four key players that you want to build the spine around. I mean, three. I mean, goalkeepers, kind of a given. So let's just say three, those three key players. So, you know, if that is the plan, then it would seem like a given to me that you'd want to extend his contract sooner rather than later. Once again, it sounds to me, I mean, from the rumors, from articles written, it sounds to me like Dybala's demands aren't absurd. It sounds like, I mean, yeah, they're increased wages, yes, of course, but it doesn't sound like it's, you know, he wants Ronaldo level wages or something like that. You know, I don't get the idea that that's been the case. So
no, he is not asking for 30 million euros net, Chucks.
Hey, you never know, man. You never know. Hey, inflation, I'm telling you. It's the supply chain, I'm telling you. It's, so, you know, at least that, like, it sounds like he's been reasonable. Of course, very specific clauses of the contract. There might be, I don't know, fine print that he's asked for. Who knows? But just basically in terms of salary, it sounds pretty reasonable. So if it is the plan that you want to build around this spine, then yeah, you would want to, you know, get that extended as quickly as possible. If you're not willing to just walk away from the contract negotiations from what sounds to be semi-reasonable demands, then that sounds to me like you don't really have, you being the management, Juve upper management, it sounds to me like you don't have any kind of, that there is no, hate to say this, but that there is no plan. It sounds like there is no plan there to have a spine of the team, or that the spine that I'm thinking of is not the one that they are thinking of. And I mean, I think it's pretty abundantly clear to everyone that Paulo Dybala is by far the most talented player, attacking wise, the most talented player. Him and Chiesa are, you know, clearly by far the most talented attacking players at Juve. So I mean, that begs the question of like, okay, well, what is kind of the core of the team that you want to build around? And also, you know, if they let this, you know, there are about six or less than 6 months left on his contract, which means he can enter negotiations with other clubs right now. So if you're willing to let it go that far, that either means you had no idea what you were doing, or that you were very confident that you were going to sign the contract extension, again, you being the club here, that you were very confident that, you know, so confident that you were going to get this sealed up and done, that you were said that you say, you know, oh, okay, it's fine, we got this. I mean, let it go into 6 months, you know, because we'll get it done eventually. So, you know, it's either arrogance or competence that has led us to this point, which, you know, it's funny because I remember in the summer, again, I was kind of blasé about the situation. I was like, well, you know, if Dybala leaves, then, well, yeah, I guess it is what it is. Because in my defense, he was coming off the back of relatively poor season. Last season. I thought he could have been better. Of course, he had the season when he was the MVP, which, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I agreed with that, but he was good then, but, you know, I don't know if I particularly agreed with that.
The Ronaldo fanboys did not agree with
that. Well, yeah. Yeah, someone's always going to, you know, find you. Someone's going to find you and, you know, criticize you somehow. But, yeah, so, you know, he wasn't coming off a great season, so I was kind of like, you know, okay. But this season, he's actually played in his best position. And, well, what happens when you play players in their best position? They play pretty darn good football. And he has played excellent football so far. So that kind of reminded me, like, oh, yeah, he is still extremely, extremely talented.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Well, you mentioned the contract potentially running out, and think about this for a second. Obviously, we know that Chiesa, who's reportedly set to undergo surgery in the next few days, he's going to be out at least 6 months. So that kind of puts him on the borderline of if he's ready for the start of the season. Juventus could start the season if things kind of look the way they're trending at this point. Chiesa still rehabbing his knee injury. Alvaro Morata probably heading back to Atletico Madrid when Juventus don't pick up his option. Paulo Dybala potentially not on the roster because he left on a free transfer. So, as of right now, if you were to project things out, Juventus are not only going to have to spend a lot of money to try and replace those players, hopefully, but only have two attackers under contract with them, being Moise Kean and Kaio Jorge. So either way, no matter, even if Dybala stays, and I mean, throw Dejan Kulusevski in there and Bernardeschi in there as well. But I mean, in terms of like actual forwards.
Bernardeschi is a free agent this summer too.
That's right. So, I mean, at least he's looking like he could sign a contract extension, unlike Paulo Dybala. But my main point is in terms of the players who play striker, or, you know, seconda punta, there aren't many players who could be on this roster that are currently on this roster next season who are on this season's roster. So it's just either way, Juventus are going to have to spend money, no matter if Dybala somehow magically does sign this contract extension or not. It's just
it's just a
total mess. And
therein lies the rub of where is our money? It's not there.
Yeah. I said on Twitter yesterday, you know, I can see the Juventus point of view where, look, Dybala's injuries have been like, okay, do we really want to commit this amount of money to a guy who is probably going to, with his injury history the last 2 years, going to miss a good amount of games? But you can also, I also said, you know, I totally understand why Dybala's pissed, because this has been 2 years of just complete uncertainty. And then, as we mentioned at the top of the show, even before that, this Juventus front office, minus Fabio Paratici, tried to get rid of him. And when you look at the front office, the only, I mean, Cherubini has been here. He's just now moved up the ladder. So Arrivabene is the only new guy. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's weird to see Arrivabene in this capacity. Just like you said, Sam, just being the new guy, and obviously he's familiar with Juventus, but just taking shots at their best player this season. I mean, it's mind-boggling to see how we've gotten to this point, because there are so many avoidable steps along the way.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like there was a plan. And I remember Chucks, I was thinking about this week. Chucks, when Andrea Pirlo got hired last year, you know, that was when you very, very much were insisting that there just doesn't seem to be a plan anymore. I was still of the opinion that I could see something, but now I'm moving more towards where you are here. I don't see what the plan is, unless they just need so much time to be able to pivot away from the Cristiano Ronaldo years. But the fact of the matter is that pivoting away from the Cristiano Ronaldo years really ought to include Dybala. And here we are talking about, you know, whether or not he'll be headed out on a free, you know, at the end of this season. It's like South Park. This does not make sense.
And like I said, we won't, you know, Danny, you described Morata, Dybala, and Chiesa. Well, Dybala potentially leaving, and then Morata likely going back to Atleti, and Chiesa being injured. I mean, you know, that's minus three players and plus zero money, you know, because obviously no, you know, transfer fees from any of them. I mean, Chiesa coming back, of course, from injury, but the other two, you know, not having any money coming in. So that's, pretty grim.
Chiesa is quite literally minus 60 million euros this summer because they have to complete his deal.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So in fact, there is apparently, I saw one news report saying that Chiesa actually, and I don't think they'd be this stupid, but Chiesa had apparently, because of this injury, the statistical bits for triggering the obligation in the loan might actually get missed, but they'd be stupid not to go through with it, because Chiesa is easily your best player once he gets back on the field, especially if Dybala is gone. But yeah, that's the other thing. You were talking, Danny, about how Juventus is going to have to pay a lot of money. Well, in the next two summers, you've got 60 million going out for Chiesa. You've got another 40 going out for Locatelli the summer after that, and you've got Kane on an obligation to buy. That is, I think, what, 15 or 20? So that's another 60 million two summers from now, and there's going to be very little room, unless we find a lot more money somewhere else, for new recruitment, for lack of a better rumor, the Vlahovic's of the world. It's just, you know, it's not there.
And you've got the added dynamic of, yeah, okay, we're optimistic that Chiesa will come back and be the Chiesa of old, but it's a major knee injury. You never know for sure. I mean, this ACL injuries aren't, I mean, yeah, you have the chances of being back to being a very good player now as compared to 20, 25 years ago. But you look at, and albeit it's kind of double the punch in the gut for somebody like Nico Zaniolo, you just don't know for sure. I mean, it's a process. So it's not like Chiesa is going to come out and look like the Chiesa at Euro 2020 right off the bat. I mean, it's going to take time. And then you have to seriously now entertain the idea of Dybala not being around that team next season. And God, the attack is just going to look, I mean, I don't know what the attack's going to look like, because there's so many players with just giant question marks around them.
Basically, Kane, Kaio, Juan, and that's another one. not even Cuadrado has officially signed his contract extension, and that was supposedly a done deal months ago too.
Yeah, I think I can't remember if it was Romeo Agresti or somebody else, but essentially Juventus has put all contract extension talks on hold for now, just because the Dybala thing was kind of like the snowball to get everything rolling. You know, you figured they'd get Dybala done late last year, and then it would be handed off to Cuadrado, and then it'd be handed off to Bernardeschi, and so on and so forth. So this Dybala contract standstill has just affected the club in numerous ways. And now your most talented player is officially pissed off at the club. And who knows if that bridge can be rebuilt at this point, who knows?
You can only push somebody that loves you so far before you finally, you know, wreck it all. And it ends anyway. So is true in life. So is true in football. And it really is looking like this contract negotiation. It feels like surgery done with an axe. Like it's just, it's just been
now that is a mental image.
It's just not contract negotiations, especially one for a player like Dybala. They are finely tuned things, and Juve feel like the front office is just are going at it with blunt instruments.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't, you know, I wish I had the time to look into Juve's financials and, you know, excruciating detail as Fefu does and others do as well. Unfortunately, I don't. But yeah, I mean, you have to wonder if there's something, which I mean, I guess we sort of know that there is something wrong with our financials. But you have to wonder if there's something that we don't know about the financials that is so serious that it's, I don't know, just kind of messed up their contract negotiation or their ability to negotiate contracts or something financially going on. Of course, there's the whole case of the Plus Valenza case, I guess, court case, if you want to call it. I forget what they called the investigation, but I remember they had a name for it. Was it Prisma or something? Nah, I don't remember. But anyway, the whole ordeal with the
I keep wanting to call it like Optimus Prime or something.
Yeah, well, I always prefer the Decepticons, unless and I always prefer if Shia LaBeouf was there. Yeah, without Mark Wahlberg, ain't the real one. Come on now. But yeah, I mean, there must be something going on that we don't know about that just has completely, I don't know, hamstrung their ability to seal any kind of contract negotiations, as you mentioned with the other players as well. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's standard practice to not have multiple players' contracts running out in the same year to year and a half. I mean, I'm pretty sure you don't want to do that. So I don't know. Who knows? As the great Drake once sang, why are they always acting like we can fix it with a meeting? Well, rapped actually, didn't sing it, but rapped it.
It seemed to work for Locatelli. They finally managed it after a bunch of them. So
don't worry. Juventus has more meetings with Sassuolo as the Scamacca talks are supposedly set to begin for the summertime. So back to meeting with Sassuolo.
Back to listening to more Drake.
Be like,
that's just you,
like, do you think that they do it like at their own at the club offices, or do you think they go to like restaurants or stuff, and the waiters are just like, oh god, these guys again?
Knowing it's a pandemic, I hope it's Zoom.
Yeah, that
fair.
Too, and
that's
and,
fair enough.
And anyone that's watched, I don't know, some spy shows knows surely you're not going to do that at a restaurant with all these people that can listen to it. You know? Surely you're going to do it at, I don't know, a park with your backs.
That's why you do that's why you do the cone of silence, like in Get Smart.
The last few years, you definitely haven't seen the plethora of pictures of random Serie A sporting directors meeting up at hotels to have a dinner and a chat with other random Serie A sporting directors.
Wasn't there a picture of that with like Nedved and Raiola just not too long ago?
Yes. And then of course Delict rumors like that, came out after that. So
yeah, times. Exactly.
We'll blame you, Chucks. He's Dutch.
Yeah, blame accepted.
And the Dutch.
That's right. Before we get to a few Twitter questions here, we will talk a little bit about the Supercopa, which wasn't exactly the greatest way to start the week, and especially so if you're a certain Alexandro. And as much as the talk was around Dybala this weekend, I think coming out of the Supercopa, the talk, at least for a lot of us on the blog, was about the massive mistake that Alexandro did and just kind of how far he's fallen over the last couple of years. And, you know, I know some people went back and forth. Well, he's never good to begin with, or he was, you know, he's still.
No, he was very good to begin with. That's,
yeah. That's the unfortunate part. But I guess, how would we kind of describe, obviously you don't want to lose a trophy regardless of how we perceive the Supercopa, but did Juventus play actually that poorly? I mean, I guess that's what I'm going for. Obviously the Sandro mistake clouds our judgment on everything because of the manner in which it came and the time in which it came. But I still can't decide if Juventus actually played poorly against Inter, knowing just how kind of, especially just how shorthanded they were and how just it felt like the team was, for the most part, doing a good job of not letting Inter just kick their ass.
I mean, it wasn't. I mean, the defensively for that performance to go and essentially keep them out from open play until that last mistake, is that an accomplishment, especially for this, the way this Inter team has been playing? Yeah. At the same time, I felt like there were a lot of missed opportunities in this game. I feel like after McKennie scored the goal, Juve were really kind of pushing the issue. And you know, they could have perhaps kept Inter back on their heels a little longer, scored another goal, made it really difficult on them. And then again, didn't do that. And almost the same thing happened on Saturday with, you know, when Juve just came out of the locker room against Udinese totally flat for the first 10 minutes. You know, this is a team that scores a goal and then decides that it's over. And that happens with such frequency that it can't be just the players being lackadaisical about it anymore. That has to be coming from the manager at this point, if you ask me, which is always been one of my pet peeves about Max Allegri. But so, I mean, was it a defensive accomplishment to do what they did against Inter? Yeah, for the most part, I guess that is certainly a plausible argument. But I was left with this taste in my mouth that we probably could have and should have done more, especially in that first half after McKennie scored, to really kind of push the advantage, and it never happened. And then Sandro, you know, makes that. And like, I agree with you, Danny, that Sandro was that good for several years. You know, I remember going into the Cardiff final, he was, you know, there was the talk, you know, is he now, you know, is he challenging Marcelo as the best left back in the world at that time? And now he's just at that point in his career where, like, you know, when you were a kid and you had a pet and your pet died, but your parents didn't have the heart to explain death to you yet. So they told you that it was like, went to a farm with other animals where they could play and their old age. Like, that's where Alexandro's career is at the footballing version of that farm. His time as an effective player, especially at the level that Juve wants to be, it's over. And Luca Pellegrini came in and played really, really well on that left side against Udinese. And then Mattia Decilio, much to Sergio's chagrin, probably came in and perhaps did even better than Pellegrini.
That is the real reason why Sergio isn't here.
Yeah, he's like, both Decilio and Rugani had really good games, and he just can't own up to it and face it.
Sergio is sitting in the fetal position somewhere.
Yeah.
Just scared to click on the Zoom link because of what happened on Saturday.
Because, oh gosh, yeah. But it is time officially to look at Luca Pellegrini and say, no, this is your job now, run with it. Felt like that's where it was headed before Pellegrini got hurt in December. I assume he was taken out when he was, because as a minutes managing move, because I remember Allegri saying that he didn't have 90 minutes in his legs yet in a pregame press conference a couple games ago.
Yeah. That's what I assumed it was, unlike Arthur, who obviously took a knock towards the end of
took a knock and also was on that yellow card and kind of lived a little too dangerously while he was on that yellow card for the rest of that, first half.
That is the Arthur way.
Yeah. But yeah, it is time for the changing of the guard at that position to happen. And hopefully Pellegrini runs with it the way that, that we all hope that he has and that he has the ability to.
I mean, I don't know. I'm going to be slightly contrarian as a, I guess my job is here. Yeah, I don't know. Duly noted as my job here. But yeah, I mean, you know, lest we forget. Well, actually, before I say that, you know, this kind of oddly has been the season of redemptions for a lot of players. You know, Bernardeschi had been written off as a wash, and, you know, he's, I mean, not come back as a Ballon d'Or winning player, but, you know, has been competent. You just mentioned DeCilio. He's also kind of, yeah, seemingly recovered quite well from, I mean, not necessarily being like absolutely terrible, but just not being, you know, not being exactly a source of hope and inspiration for Juve. Not like, wow, we got DeCilio, you know, nice. We're going places. You know, DeCilio has been, yeah, pretty stable the last few matches as well. Again, small sample size, but not too bad there either. Lest we forget as well, Chesney, starting the season, had, you know, that, well, just terrible run of games at the start of the season. And yeah, we were, you know, talking with some concern about him as well. And he has also recovered very well himself. And just someone, again, very, very small sample size. But Lugani as well. Daniele Lugani has had, you know, two pretty solid games also. So, you know, this has been a season, or kind of a period anyway, of mini redemptions and glimmers of hope for players that we thought were just... yeah, just not Juve quality anymore, and seemingly have at least made themselves, like I said, competent to be able to play for Juve. So yeah, with the Alexandro thing, you know, I'll like lightly stand by what I said last week, which is, you know, I don't think he's a complete wash just yet. But yeah, I mean, it is definitely justified to give someone like Luca Pellegrini more opportunities, which I think Allegri seems to understand, and I think he seems to have quite some faith in Pellegrini. I mean, enough faith to anyway give him, you know, 90-minute games or 60-90-minute games and stuff. So I think that's pretty encouraging there. Yeah, I mean, and Alexandro, it's like I go back and forth because I was reading a lot of the post-match commentary from, I mean, just on the articles, but then also from, you know, just commenters on our website. And yeah, I mean, it was very surprised. It was very polarized. It was, you know, it was kind of back and forth between some people saying, yeah, Alexandro's just completely, you know, sell him now, he's done, whatever. And those saying that, which there might be some merit to that argument, saying that, you know, he was honestly pretty solid for the 119 minutes, I guess, of the game. And then, yeah, that crucial mistake, obviously, you know. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that was a completely invalid argument. I don't think he was, you know.
Juve loses that game in normal time if Perin doesn't make the save on Dumfries, and that was totally on Sandro for losing him.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely his side.
I didn't think he played a particularly solid. I don't think, and this was something that actually ticked me off a little bit when Allegri came up with his press conference the day before the Udinese game. I do not think that Sandro's game on Wednesday was a case of good game undone by one enormous mistake. I don't think he had a good game overall. Don't call a guy out in the middle of a press conference. Don't do that. That's bad management. But also don't blow smoke up our rear ends over it either. I really do think that was the case for Sandro, because he, you know, talking about how he, you know, oh yeah, he had a good game. And made one mistake. No, it wasn't. I don't think it was. He was, you know, he did very little on the attack. And I don't think that he was a solid. He had a lot of, his counting numbers were high in that game for tackles and stuff. But I don't think overall he played a particularly good game defensively either. I thought it was a bad game overall.
And that kind of comes back to my, you know, very first point, the takeaway, which is, you know, being able, I guess for me anyway, just kind of thinking about how I assess players, specifically in this case, fullbacks, because, well, like I said, just a practical standpoint of them being on the very edge of screen, and, you know, it makes it kind of tricky to see them. But yeah, I mean, again, you know, the team as a whole, I thought, So going back to the original question, Danny, the team as a whole, I thought was honestly quite good against Inter in the Supercopa. Given injuries, given suspensions, I thought really we were quite good. Obviously, we took the lead, and then, yeah, you know, we back off a little bit, I guess. But, you know, they only scored the equalizer 10 minutes after McKennie's goal. So it's a little hard to, I mean, judge too much from there.
Also, that call was rough. I did not think that was a penalty. You look at that, you see Dzeko stepping on DeCilio's foot and then throwing himself.
I do agree.
Was not a great call, and should have been, in my opinion, should have been reviewed, but...
Yeah, I thought the Chiellini incident on Barella was probably more of a penalty. I thought that was...
I didn't think that was either. I think they were both the same. Barella stepped on Chiellini. That was the... Like in both of those instances, the contact was initiated by the Inter player.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought, like I said, I don't know if that was a stone, like the Chiellini Barella one. I don't know. I wasn't like, oh, okay, that's a stonewall penalty, but I was like, you know, I thought that one was like, oh yeah, that was like, I mean, I would have been angry if he'd given it, obviously, but I would have given it a benefit of a doubt. But the Dzeko one with the Chiellini, yeah, I thought that was. I don't think that was correct call. Agreed. I mean, I think he stepped on DeCilio's foot there. Dzeko stepped on DeCilio's foot. That said, DeCilio pretty poorly estimated that. Speaking of mistakes, I guess, or singular mistakes, or, you know, performance, good performances being outdone by mistakes. I think that was just poor estimation there of DeCilio in terms of, like, how quickly he thought he would get to the ball or just overestimated his own speed, or I don't know. I just think he didn't assess the situation there. There's a good Dutch word for it that I can't translate, but anyway, the closest word I can get is estimate there. But yeah, like I said, overall, I think we were honestly good, just given the circumstances, given that it is really the best team in Italy, as much as it pains me to say it, Inter is. And I mean, we held them to 1-1 for, you know, 100 or something minutes, and given injuries, given suspensions,
119 minutes and 58 seconds.
Yes, thank you. quick math, or something like that. And yeah, I mean, you know, they are by far just the best team in Italy. They just had an 8-game winning streak ended by Atalanta or something like that. And you know, I think Inter were overall maybe slightly edged the game, but I don't think it was like a blowout. Like, it was chance after chance after chance. You know, it was honestly a fairly even contest, and probably 1-1 would have been a fair result, but yeah, well, fine margins in football.
We'll wrap things up with a couple of Twitter questions here. First one from @ArthurSchmidt4, taking into account injuries, who is the ideal starting 11 going forward? Additionally, given the current financial hardships, why isn't recalling loan players seemingly an option?
To address the second part of that first, the team that has the loaned player also has to make that agreement. So, you know, it takes two in that case. Although I do think, you know, I would have liked to see, you know, a move where Nicola Rovella comes back, you know, in January. But, you know, we'll get to see him hopefully next year doing more and doing it in a Juve shirt. As for the best starting 11, oh man. Okay. In my opinion, it would go as a 4-2-3-1 with Danilo, De Ligt, Chiellini / Bonucci, because Chiellini obviously needs his minutes managed. Pellegrini, McKennie and Locatelli in midfield, Dybala in the hole, Cuadrado on the right, Moisekane on the left, and Morata at striker with Woj in goal. That to me is probably the best fit starting 11 based on who we've got available for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm trying to look. Sorry, as you were talking, I was trying to look at which players we even have on loan. Yeah, well, it's not fast enough, but
I feel like the only one that would be worth bringing back would be Rovella.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even really. Well, yeah, again, I was not quite fast enough there to look it up, but yeah, just off memory, I mean, Rovella is the only one I really remember of being on loan. So, I mean, I don't even know who we would, you know, get back on loan. So, but yeah, I mean, I'll look that up later as I answer your question. Yeah, best starting 11. Yeah, basically agree with what you said. Yeah, I'd say Pellegrini, De Ligt. Yeah, injuries. I guess, I mean, Bonucci is fit, but then he's technically suspended, sort of, right? Guess I'll tentatively put Bonucci in there. I mean, Lugani has had good games, but, you know, let's not get too enthusiastic just yet. So, yeah, tentatively kind of put Bonucci in there. I should put Cuadrado as right back. I've generally found, and I think I mentioned this last week, that I prefer, for the sake of the team, I prefer Cuadrado more at right back rather than at, rather than further up the pitch. I think he's just more useful to the team there. I think he's better I think he's just more useful to the team as a more attacking right back than a slightly more defensive leaning right mid. But that's, I mean, it's just me, my preference. Yeah, and then Dybala, Morata, of course. Yeah, like you said, up front. Then in midfield, yeah, I've been pretty impressed by, I mean, McKennie has been great centrally, but also kind of coming off the wing. What I noticed, actually, that was kind of my other takeaway that I had to choose between. I noticed that, I mean, Dybala drops so deep. I mean, just so.
Oh, man, he got it in there.
but yes, I did. But Dybala, you know, from the seconda punta position, I mean, you see him sometimes even, you know, behind like Locatelli, I mean, on during at times against Udinese, I noticed he was, you know, even further back than Locatelli. So what happened then was that McKennie then kind of shifted diagonally like into Dybala's position, which I mean, I thought that was a pretty interesting little tactical variation there. And I mean, it worked well. McKennie has been playing very well lately. So I'm going to, I guess, kind of like what I saw there. So I'm going to go with McKennie then on the left. Yes, on the left. And Locatelli centrally. And I'm going to give it to Artur there. Artur next to Locatelli and then Kulusevski on the right. And then, yeah, Dybala and Morata up front.
Final question here from at PeteFry1. Transfer focus at the moment, rightly, is on strikers and midfielders. But are there any young Italian center backs Juve should be looking at buying for the future, you know, if they have money and everything?
Well, I actually don't really know.
Thank you, Chucks. That is a show for this week.
No, I mean, Bastoni, of course, he plays for Inter, and I mean, he's not available. But, I mean, Bastoni, besides his just heinous dive against Juve, which I thought was just bloody disgraceful.
That deserved a yellow card.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, that was just, I mean, I'm pretty mild-mannered guy. I thought that was just absolutely ludicrous dive. But anyway, yeah, Bastoni is a fantastic player, though. I mean, he's a pseudo-center back, but he was playing very high up the pitch against Juve. I know there's very high on the left, on that left center back, basically left midfield at some points. But, I mean, he impressed me very much, though. I mean, has impressed me recently as well. So, yeah, I mean, Bastoni is very, very good, but not available, obviously.
And you've got to talk about loan players coming back. There is Radu Dragosin, who they seem to be very high on. He hasn't played much at Sampdoria on loan, unfortunately, but you know, there's a prospect to have around in case, you know, and maybe have him learn a little bit on the job here at Juve before maybe seeing if he has a shot. But other than that, there aren't a ton of guys that are young and like you said, Chuck's available, that I would look at and just say, this guy needs to be a Juventus player. I do think we're certainly regretting missing, you know, allowing Mero Demiral to head out this summer at this point. But yeah, apart from Dragosin coming back on loan, I can't really think of anything.
Yeah, this definitely isn't the era of prime young Italian defenders coming up, is it? At least central defenders. There's some young fullbacks who are pretty solid, but not necessarily, outside of Bastoni, not necessarily the plentiful selection of, you know, young Italian center backs who are definitely waiting to take that next step in their career. But you never know.
I heard Daniele Rugani is waiting to receive
the phone. That's right. He is the young Italian central defender who is just waiting for his chance, Chucks. You just wait.
It's never too late.
All right, that's the perfect spot to wrap things up for this week's episode. Thank you all for your Twitter questions. We always appreciate them. If you want to send us Twitter questions, you can send them to us at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can also follow us there, as well as on Facebook at Black and White and Red All Over. You can also subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting platform, whether it is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, feel free to leave us a rating and a review and all of that nice stuff. So for Sam, for Chucks, and the absent Sergio, who should be back next week, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. And speaking of next week, we will talk to you guys next week.